The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Welcome. Welcome. I just returned from teaching a retreat. Just appreciating, it's just so great to sit together. Makes a difference to be practicing in community. And this retreat was an experienced students retreat, so it's a little bit different, but it's not uncommon on maybe less experienced retreatants for somebody to come in for a practice discussion and say something like, I don't know what's, everybody else seems to be doing fine. Look how quiet they are, still they are when they're sitting, but I'm terrible. I can't do this. I'm hopeless, or, you know, some version of this. They're feeling restless and they look around and people are sitting quietly and they're making a story about it. Making something, a story about themselves, what it means about them. Having seen something out there, they turn it into a story about them. So there's this way in which the mind likes to appoint itself, kind of like the judge of oneself. Maybe the judge and the jury and the measurer of spiritual progress, meditation capacity, or something like this. And so this is something I want to talk about tonight. Is because this judging that we do of ourselves, judging of others, is the thief of happiness. This is a phrase that Rob Burbay, another Dharma teacher, has said. Just judgment is the thief of happiness because it turns something that is seen, that is observed, perhaps a difficulty, into an identity, a feeling of maybe restlessness while meditating. And then that turns into an evaluation, and then this feeling like, oh, I can't do it. And there's a constriction and a tightness, and maybe some disappointment or collapse, or maybe it's just brief, or maybe it lasts for a long time. So in this way, restlessness turns into, I'm a bad meditator. Or maybe a sense of, I'm hopeless if we feel like we've been doing this for a while and we're not having the expectations that we would like to have. So the question is, maybe we could say for practice, is not so much, maybe we shouldn't stop seeing what's painful, or we shouldn't stop evaluating or stop doing something like this. But the question is more, can we see clearly without putting ourselves on trial or others on trial in some kind of way where we say, oh, this is bad. It means something about these other people, or it means something about me. On just a limited bit of data, we are constructing a whole story about ourselves and about others. Because practice, Dharma practice, is about finding more freedom, about finding more ease and peace. It's not about becoming a perfect spiritual meditator or a spiritual self or something like this. It's about having us to have some more openness and meeting each moment with openness as best we can, as opposed to a closed idea of who we think we are or who we think those other people are. Whomever the other people are, that varies, of course. So we're not trying to turn ourselves into somebody who's always calm or never feels emotions. Doesn't feel some fear, doesn't feel irritation or confusion. But we could say this practice is about, can we meet life with less clinging, less fear, less judgment in which we're really putting ourselves down? Because this way in which we judge ourselves kind of like drains, like quietly drains out the energy, the qualities that really support practice. If we're judging ourselves, then that kind of like takes away the interest we might have, takes away patience we might have, humility, tenderness, some of these qualities that are really needed to be doing this practice. Because we don't want our spiritual practice to turn into just one more place in which we have to perform, or one more place in which the inner critic can get really loud and be persuasive, or we don't want this to feel like yet one more self-improvement project. Another place where we might succeed or fail or measure ourselves. But this practice, this Dharma practice, is inviting something maybe gentler and braver. So I'm not saying that we don't do an evaluation. We do need to evaluate. But can there be an honesty about how our practice is going, how we're showing up in the world, that doesn't collapse into shame, that doesn't collapse into an evaluation of who we are as a person because we're restless when we meditate, or sometimes we're feeling irritated, or sometimes we're not calm? Maybe the practice is inviting us to have this willingness to begin again. Just like we do, right, with meditation, we have the object of the breath. So often the mind wanders and we just begin again when we find ourselves completely lost in thought, story making. And then we just begin again over and over and over. It doesn't matter how many times we have to begin again. This can be so helpful in our life, as well as, of course, in a meditation practice. So we're still seeing clearly, we're still learning, we can still recognize what causes suffering and what causes less suffering, but we don't have to make a cage out of what we see, where we feel boxed in about an evaluation of ourselves. So we might say that discernment rather than judgment is what's needed here. Whereas discernment asks, where does this lead? Is this helpful? Is this healthy, what I'm experiencing, what I'm doing? Just in a way to want, born out of care, wanting to reduce suffering for ourselves and for others. Whereas discernment is asking, where does this lead? Is this helpful? Judgment is asking, well, what does this prove about me as a person? What does it prove about those other people as a person, as people? So discernment is essential for this path of practice. We need to be able to see what leads to greater freedom. What kind of behavior, what kind of speech, what kind of qualities of the heart lead to greater ease? Notice what kind of thoughts lead to greater openness and kindness and empathy with others. Notice what kind of actions bring greater peace for ourselves and others. But judgment adds this, maybe it sees the same thing about what's helpful, what's not helpful, but then it adds on top of it something about identity. Therefore, this means something about me as a person, or therefore, it means something about those people over there. So judgment adds this extra part about identity, and this turns out to not be helpful. We could say it's kind of like this simile of the smoke alarm in the kitchen. You're cooking and the smoke alarm goes off, you know, really loud, beep, beep, beep. It's like, okay, this is helpful. It's good to know when there's a smoke happening so you can take care of it. Whereas judgment, instead of going beep, 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 it might be saying, you're a lousy cook. Just give up now. You're always making a mess in the kitchen and look what you've done again. So it's responding to the same situation, but with a whole different feeling about it, and one that's supportive and helpful and one that's not so helpful. So the Buddha, before he was the Buddha, before he was awakened, he noticed in his mind that he actually had two types of thoughts. Well, he had a whole bunch of thoughts, and he was putting them into two categories, those that are helpful and those that aren't helpful. And having made that evaluation, he said, you know what, I'm going to cultivate these ones that are helpful and work to diminish, let go, abandon the ones that aren't helpful. He didn't say, and I'm a bad person because I have these ones that are unhelpful. He just noticed, like, yeah, okay, it's pretty clear that these categories, these experiences are helpful and the other ones aren't. So I'm going to go this direction. And that's what helped him to become awakened. So of course there's an evaluation, but it's just an evaluation to help us find more peace and freedom. We're not expecting to become passive or to no longer be paying attention to anything. So there's this middle way, you might say. So it's not that there's permissiveness for anything goes. We shouldn't evaluate anything. And everything's okay. It doesn't matter what you do. And we're also, it's not about this self-condemnation, beating ourselves up. It's about seeing clearly as best we can without attacking ourselves, without attacking others, as best we can. So then you might ask, well, okay, that sounds nice, but how do we do this? How can we support this idea of having less identity, less self and other that gets associated with what we are observing and seeing? In one way is to, as best we can, be with our direct experience. Notice the constriction when judgment happens or when we are feeling uncomfortable because something that we said feels like, oh, that, yeah, I was a little harsh there. I think I could be less harsh. Because there's this way that judgment says, I'm failing, or I'm broken, or I'm angry, or something like this. Whereas just simple practice mindfulness says, yeah, anger is being experienced. And I know this is clunky language. This isn't how we would normally speak, but it's a real difference to say, yeah, anger is here. Anger is known. Anger is being experienced. As opposed to say, I am an angry person. It's a really different experience. Or maybe we would say discouragement is here, or constriction, or openness, or ease is here. And so then when we see the experience as an experience, then it begins to open and things can unfold differently. There's this way when we're really identified with, you know, I'm an angry person or something like this, then it kind of perpetuates that. The identity that's getting put on it, it's kind of like boxes it in. Instead of allowing the experience of anger to be known, and it's uncomfortable, and to recognize it and to arise and then pass away. But as soon as we're saying, I'm an angry person, then we kind of like hold on to it and are tangled up with it in some kind of way that it persists. So this is one thing to do. Just recognize experience as experience and recognize when we're adding something on top, like, therefore, because I had this or this experience, it means X, Y, and Z about me. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. We don't have to hold on to it. We can say, yeah, okay, it looks like anger arises over here when I feel like the driver is right on my tailgate. That happened to me as I was driving over here, and I noticed a little flash for like, oh, when there's somebody was right on my tail. Right? These things happen. So something else we can do to help practice with judgment is to notice. Sometimes there might be like a little vignette. Maybe you come home and there's a whole pile of dirty dishes in the sink. Somebody you share your household with has just left all these dirty dishes, and there's some irritation that arises. And some maybe there's this thought, oh, I can't believe they're doing this again. They're so inconsiderate or disrespectful, or I don't know, there's a whole list of things we could come up with. We're just making a judgment about them, who they are as a person, because there's dirty dishes in the sink. And there's this way we just take one event and we just assign so many things to a person based on an observation. If we live with them, I'm sure we're recognizing patterns. It's not a single time. But there's more to people's humanity than this. So a practice we can do is, what else is here? What else is being known? This person maybe left dirty dishes in the sink, but there's something more to them than that. So instead of assigning an identity, they are like this, can we maybe just feel our disappointment or frustration or discouragement or anger or whatever it might be? Or if we don't even know the person, can we recognize that we don't know the person? So often we are assigning motives to people, and we don't really know their motives. So often we don't even know our own motives, and yet we are think that we know others. So can we recognize that I don't really know everything about what's happening? So a third thing that we can do to help with judgment, and I've done this on a few times in a way when I felt really kind of like tangled up and felt like I needed to have a different perspective. And I found this really helpful. So that is, can we look at the situation differently? Like review, look at it in a different way to better understand all the conditions that came together to create that experience. To recognize that there's a way in which, instead of just being one experience that then we assign a label onto it, it means this. No, actually, it arose out of all kinds of things happening. And this is a big message of the Dharma practice. And the Dharma teachings is to see how things are related. There's not like just one isolated event, but it's impossible. So for example, perhaps you meet a friend for coffee, and she is telling you some of the difficulty she is going through, and she's describing the difficulty, and while you're listening, you're noticing a little bit of like disquiet within yourself. You're not like really connecting with her and what she's saying. And you're vaguely worrying that maybe you should be feeling a little more empathy or a little bit more compassion for your friend. Instead, you're noticing that you're feeling a little bit disconnected. And later when you reflect on that, it kind of bothers you. Like, well, why couldn't I be there for my friend? I wasn't really fully present for what she was saying. And there's this way in which we feel like, oh, well, maybe I'm not a good friend. maybe I don't like her, or maybe, you know, I should do something else. There's a way we make it kind of entirely about ourselves. And so can we evaluate it differently, review, look at it again from different perspectives? So maybe there's four different ways in which we could look at this. One is maybe you had a headache. It's something like this. And because you had a headache and at the coffee place it was loud and there was maybe music, and with your headache, you just weren't feeling very well. And that influenced how you were meeting her. So we could say your present moment inner experience, so what was happening with you, influenced how you showed up. And when we are judging ourselves, we tend to discount these types of things, some of our biology or physiology. If you have a pain in your back or something like this, you know, we tend to be a little bit, show up differently when we have physical discomfort. And it affects us. We're not machines. Of course it affects us. So maybe the reason why you were feeling a little bit disconnected from your friend is because the two of you have a little bit of unresolved conflict from an earlier meeting. Maybe in earlier meeting, she was giving you all kinds of advice that was not solicited. You know what you really should do is A, B, and C, or something like this. And then you were kind of, I didn't really like her advice, and you didn't say anything about it. And so now you're feeling a little bit uncomfortable about her. So we could say this is a past inner, like inner being with oneself as opposed to external environment. So inner, present inner, past inner conditions that, you know, might have contributed to feeling disconnected from your friend. Or maybe there is a way in which she was telling her story. Maybe the way you felt like she was holding back, and you were feel like, okay, there must be something missing to this story because this doesn't quite make sense. And you feel like there's got to be more here, that, well, what is she not saying? Or maybe she was hamming it up and laughing about something that was kind of awful, but she was, you know, making it seem lighthearted or something. And so you were feeling like, oh, I don't quite know how to react here. So we could say that's present moment outer. That was what was in the environment in that present moment. And then a fourth reason, maybe while you were feeling disconnected, is because maybe the coffee shop where you met is the, you have memories associated with that place of maybe you got in a big fight with somebody you care about deeply there. And that was the first time you'd been back there. Or, I don't know, something like this. So that would be past outer. So the only reason why we're using these categories, which are, you know, contrived, we could say superficial, not necessarily, you know, distinct, is just to recognize there's so many different things that are coming together to create each situation. And sometimes we are just blaming ourselves entirely or blaming others entirely, and not recognizing like, oh, no, there's a lot of things that are coming together. Things happening in the present moment, inner and outer, with oneself and the environment. And things from the past, with oneself and the environment, that come together. And then this helps kind of with our judgment, our sense of like, oh, these people are that way, or I'm this way. It's more of a recognition like, oh, okay, all these conditions came together and I behaved this way. It doesn't mean I'm a terrible person. It doesn't mean I'm a great person. It means I behaved that way at that time. And this is where more freedom can be. As soon as we start blaming, there's a way that we kind of just close down. And like, we're no longer like connecting or being open to ourselves or to others. Blaming is a way in which there's such a strong sense of separation. If we're blaming ourselves, then we separate ourselves from everybody else. If we're blaming others, it's always like, oh, those people over there, that person over there. It really highlights this separation, especially when there's this righteous, self-righteous indignation, you know, this, I can't believe it. I'm not saying that this, you know, harm doesn't happen. Of course harm happens, but there's a way in which we kind of like back ourselves into a corner if we're stuck blaming and separating and judging. But instead, can we use some discernment? Oh, the way this person is speaking to me, yeah, this feels disrespectful. I need to set some boundaries. Might even leave the room or interrupt them and say, this is not okay. Yeah, well, this conversation is not working. Maybe we could talk about this another time or something like this. To use some discernment that beating ourselves up, the inner critic, just is a way of beating ourselves up. It's true that we can use some evaluation. We can evaluate how we're showing up in our life and in our practice. I'm not saying, again, that we should be permissive for everything and allow anything to happen. But can we just notice experiences as experiences and not assigning identities? This means something about me. This means something about you. It's just what's happening right now. And that allows things to unfold. And this habit of judgment, this habit of blaming, it does soften. And then there's just so much more ease in the world, so much ease in one's life. It can feel like a habit, a pattern that, well, of course, I'm going to judge. And if I don't judge myself harshly, who else is going to? I need to in order to be the best version of myself. There's plenty of scientific data to show that that turns out not to be true. Just inner critic is a way that makes us shut down and not want to take chances and not grow and learn. I could do a whole another Dharma talk on that, and I've done a number of them. But I'm not saying that we need to abandon wisdom about what's helpful, what's not helpful. I'm not saying that we don't set boundaries with others or anything like this. I am saying, can we stop making these evaluations, these judgments about our character, who we are as people, based on experiences, and instead recognize that who we are as people, who other people are people, is dynamic, changing, a process. There's no need to have it be one particular way, one simple label. And in this way, this movement from judgment to discernment is a way in which we can find more and more peace, more ease, more freedom, and not only for ourselves, but for people around us. When we're not dismissive, oh, that person is, they don't know what they're talking about. Instead of like, yeah, confusion arises for that person on occasion. Instead of making it, you know, about something permanent about them. So may you have discernment in a way that supports greater peace and freedom. And may judgment soften. for yourself and for others. And in this way, we can create the world in which we want to live in. Instead of black and white, good and bad. Just allowing everybody to have their full humanity. I think I'll stop there. Thank you. And I'd like to open it up for some comments or questions. And Manny, the microphone is right behind you, and Matt, right behind you. Yeah, thank you.
In not judging and having discernment, how important is it to embrace the Buddhist teaching of there not being a separate inherent self?
I'm sorry, it's not being a separate inherent self?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no self. You know, Anatta, Anicca, there's no separate I, there's no separate self. Like, how important is that in having discernment and not judgment?
Yeah, so that is what I was pointing to with this idea of, you know, we're just, that's a moment of an experience. So I was pointing to that there isn't a separate inherent self. But often when we hear these teachings, it can feel abstract. And so I wasn't using that specific language, but that was what I was pointing to. So thank you. Anybody else have a comment or a question?
When you were talking about how the inner critic interferes, I started wondering, why is it that I like to sit with other people, not so much alone at home, even though I have a very nice place where I could sit, but things don't quite work as well. And I notice that when I'm at home and thoughts come up, I get sleepy, I get my inner critic is right there, and bingo, it beats me up. But it even beats me up if I sit there and I feel an ease and presence, and then the inner critic comes and says, "You're kidding yourself. You're a foolish person." But when I'm here with other people, the inner critic has, at least for me, far less power to do that. And I wonder, is that something you can comment on?
It's magic. Yeah. Why are you having a different experience here when you're meditating with others than at home? I'm not exactly sure. Does anybody else have this experience too, that it's a little bit easier to meditate here, or there's less inner critic when they're meditating here? Yeah. Does anybody else want to suggest why that is? Why do you think that is? Oh, there's interruptions at home.
The cat.
The cat. Do you want to say something?
I think I remember Gil saying something to the effect about this, that it was just being in a space with other people that have the same intention sort of multiplies it, you know, over several times. So
just having many people in the room together, just having the same intention is a big part of it.
Yeah. I know for me too. Remember when I was, I'm often commenting on this, like, oh, it's so nice to practice together. There's just this recognition that it's really lovely to practice together. Yeah. I don't actually know exactly. I could make up stuff, but, I don't know. Yes. So other people do feel that way. So. Yes, maybe we can bring the microphone up here.
I think I heard someone say, I heard a different version of that, which was like, why can't I do this on my own, but like I can finally do it in Sangha. And their response was like, it sounds like Sangha is super effective for you, or like really helpful for you right now, which I thought was a nice way of reframing. It's like, not something bad is happening. It's like, oh, just lean into this like thing that is actually really nice for you. Or like, yeah.
Very nice. So this means you should come to IMC every day. How about back there?
I think there's an energy about groups that get together, whether it's a football team, PTA, or with your kids. In meditation, everyone is in an energy space, and I'm not into happy talk words, but I do believe that there are times when a group of people is meditating and there's an energy that comes about that can be aimed at people or aimed at causes that can be very, very effective, but very subtle. People may not agree, but I'm told that.
I don't know.
It's called synergy.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you all for your practice, for practicing together, and wishing you a wonderful rest of the evening and safe travels home. Thank you. Thank you, Manny.